Wednesday, January 11, 2017, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we talk sports every single Wednesday, and we do it a little bit differently here at the Daily Dose. A little bit more of the thinking person sports show, not a whole lot of crushing beer cans on our foreheads and yelling, Knicks rule! That's not exactly what we do here. We actually try to look at things with a little bit of common sense, kind of make fun of pretty much everybody in the world of sports. It's just kind of how we do things here. If you hang out here a little while, you'll end up liking it a little bit. If you would like to recommend the podcast, we would appreciate that so much. Please let your family, your friends, your coworkers know that they can subscribe to the podcast pretty much anywhere that podcasts are available. iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Republic, Google Play, Audio Boom. They can head over to blogtalkradio.com. You can always find it there. Or you can go to our website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. And while you are over there, you will see new articles every single week. Article went up this week. Might want to check that out. There are some interesting things going on down in the city of Houston. I hadn't heard about this on the regular news. Fortunately, we were able to break a little bit of news about some odd kind of circumstances, some weird things happening down in Houston, Texas. You might want to head over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com and check that out. Also, be sure to stop by our podcast network page, rogueintel.com, where Duff over there does a great job of finding podcasts that you are sure to enjoy every single week. Got a question? Got a comment? Maybe you need some advice? Maybe you would like to give us a suggestion for the show? Feel free to hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or hit us on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those handles are D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. Today on the show, of course, we've got to take a look at the NFL playoffs. Wild card round is now complete, and we are headed toward the divisional round. And who could be moving on this week in the divisional playoffs? We'll give you our picks for the divisional round now. And what are the best coaching jobs that are available out there? I coached for a number of years. Sometimes coaches tend to look at situations, they look at things a little bit different than maybe fans would. Sometimes even more than players would. I'll give you my perspective on what the best coaching jobs are that are out there available in the NFL. Might talk a little bit of NBA, and of course we will be recapping the college football national championship game that took place on Monday night. And as we do every single week, we will get to our Daily Dose Top 5. You never know where that Daily Dose Top 5 is going to go, and this week you want to make sure that you stick around for it. So, talked about it just now. What are the best coaching vacancies right now in the NFL? There's a number of things to consider when you're looking at a coaching job. It isn't just, well, that used to be a good team, or they have really good players. There's a lot of things to consider. Sometimes it isn't the job that you think it is that is the best one. And could any more jobs open up? I actually think there is a chance we could see one or two more jobs still open up in the NFL. Now, the Jacksonville Jaguars are saying they are hiring Doug Marrone to be their head coach. Way to really scour the market there, Jacksonville. You really went out, really took a good hard look. Who are we going to get? That tells me no one else wanted that job. Because I don't know that Doug Marrone would be leading the way otherwise. To be honest, when I look at that Jacksonville job, I'm not sure that job is as good as people say that it is. People continue to say, hey, that Jacksonville job is a pretty good job. Based on what? Based on all the talent they have? No. Based on the loyal fans that they have? No. Based on an owner that's going to just let you do your job and stay out of things? No. It's warm. I mean, I guess it's warm in Jacksonville. There's that. I don't know. But see, there's other things in play when you're looking at a coaching job. Yes, I want to look at a coaching job that has potential for me to do things there, has potential for me to win, or has potential for me to improve. I would like to have a loyal fan base. Going to a stadium that doesn't have anybody there serves me no advantage whatsoever. I would like to have some good young pieces in play on the roster. And I would like to have an ownership that doesn't get too involved. Let me do my job. Let me put people in places that they should be and then let them do their jobs. And can you kind of spend a little bit of money? That always helps. Kind of amazing how that is. Take a look. Let's rank these jobs from best to worst. Best, and you can call me a homer if you want to, but the Denver Broncos, that's the best job that's out there right now at the NFL. It's still a very, very talented defense. You still have Von Miller. He's a good young player. It's not like he's over the hill. You have a good, loyal fan base. You have a good stadium situation in Denver. You have an owner that stays out of your business. Now, you are going to have to deal with John Elway. Whether, I mean, I guess you can decide if you want to do that or not, or how you like that situation. That is going to be one of the things you will have to do. He still has another year on his contract as general manager and president of operations or whatever his title is. So you are going to have to deal with John Elway. You are going to have to come up with whatever it is that you're going to do at the quarterback position. Are you sticking with Trevor Siemian? Are you going with Paxton Lynch? Are you going to go get somebody else? Are you going to go hit the free agent market? Are you going to go draft someone else? I wouldn't think they'd draft anybody. But I think there's a few free agents that Denver will definitely take a look at. Denver, probably the best coaching job that's out there. So what's next? Now it starts to get a little trickier. Denver's a borderline playoff team, a year removed from winning the Super Bowl. That one's easy. What's next? You got the Rams, you got the 49ers, you got the Bills, you got the Chargers. Next team on my list might surprise you a little bit. I would go with the Los Angeles Rams. It's a talented defense. They've got some good young players on the defensive side of the ball. Running back Todd Gurley should be better. I know he had a rough year this year. Didn't have a whole lot of help on the offensive line. He should be better. Jared Goff, hopefully he makes some growth. Hopefully we see some improvement in Jared Goff. I wasn't impressed with Jared Goff very much. But I also know that Jeff Fisher doesn't exactly have a history of building up his quarterbacks into these great players. So I'll take that a little bit of a pass on that. We'll see what Jared Goff becomes. Now, it's not a great fan base in L.A., but I think if you win out there, they'll jump on the bandwagon and they'll start coming to games. But you've got to put a product on the field. Owner Stan Kroenke, little bit of a weird guy, kind of a strange guy, but he will spend money. And based on that, I'd say Los Angeles is that next best job. Yes, it's a step down. You're not going to be very good. You've got to do some work. But if you did do some decent work, Rams could maybe contend for a playoff spot, couldn't they? Possibly? Perhaps? I think the Rams is the next best job. Third down the list. I'll go to the San Diego Chargers. And I know they haven't been to the playoffs in years. And I know the team could be moving to LA. And Phillip Rivers is now, I think he's 35 years old. Those are definitely hindrances to taking that San Diego job. They do have some decent young talent. Joey Bosa, Melvin Gordon. Probably going to have to just go into that job, assuming you're going to be moving to Los Angeles. Here's the biggest drawback for that San Diego job. I don't know that the owners are getting involved in your business, but they're cheap. And the NFL players know they're cheap. Oh, you got drafted by San Diego? Sorry, man. Good luck getting anything out of them. That is a cheap, cheap, backward organization in that regard. Still, San Diego, right about middle of the pack right now. And I don't know who they're going to get. Because there are going to be a lot of coaches that say, no, you guys refuse to spend money to get good players. You guys refuse to spend money to keep good players and to sign the young rookies that you selected to a contract. That will be a drawback with San Diego Chargers. I'll give you the last two teams on my list. You can figure those ones out. Next on my list, and this is a tough one. This is tough. I'm kind of torn on this one. I guess I'll go with the Buffalo Bills. I guess. I don't know. Here's the problem with Buffalo. The problem with Buffalo is that they've got a psycho loyal fan base. But then they've got a lot of problems. A lot of problems. Doug Whaley is the GM in Buffalo. And somehow, he keeps calling all these shots. He keeps getting these players, selecting coaches, doing all the stuff behind the scenes. And then he doesn't take any of the blame and the coach ends up taking the fall. So Doug Whaley, just going into that job, I've got to worry about, okay, what's this guy's agenda? What's he really doing? Because we just saw what he did with Rex Ryan. And that seemed like a little bit of a dirty pool. How come Doug Whaley continues to skate? These are his players. He's the one out signing them. Yet he's getting away with all of it? And tell me right now, who's the quarterback? Tyrod Taylor has a $30 million option coming. They're not paying him that. So he's gone. EJ Manuel is a free agent. Right now, the Buffalo Bills quarterback is Cardale Jones. Now, there is some talent in Buffalo. Sammy Watkins, LeSean McCoy, Ronald Darby, they have some talent. And like I said, it's a great fan base. But The ownership up there and that GM with Doug Whaley, that is going to scare the good coaches away. I'm not getting involved in that. I'll go somewhere else. I can go anywhere else. When you get involved in a situation like that, you are set up to fail right from the beginning. And a good coach isn't going to do it. So the final team on my list, as far as best coaching job, has got to be the San Francisco 49ers. There's a lot of problems in San Francisco, and that's not getting fixed anytime soon. First off, they have no talent. They don't have very many good football players. They've got Carlos Hyde, a couple guys coming off of knee injuries. I don't know. Jed York is a horrible owner. They have no quarterback. They have no wide receivers. They don't have anybody to play defense. They couldn't stop the run this year to save their life. It's a bad class coming this year for drafting a quarterback. So who are you going to get? San Francisco's a mess. Now, here's the problem. No coach with any sense is going to want that job. If I'm a coach that's actually a worthwhile coach, I'm not going near that job. There's no way. You look at, you know, the Kyle Shanahans, the guys like that. I'm not going near San Francisco. Are you crazy? What are you, nuts? I'm not taking that job. So here's what you have to do if you're San Francisco. Either you have to take a chance on a young, unproven coach and hope, oh man, I hope this guy's the real deal. No one else will give him a job. We're going to let him have a shot. Hopefully he makes us look smart. Or you have to go with that retread coach that can't get a job anywhere else because no one else is going to take that job. Meddlesome owners, no talent, no quarterback. Fan base is good, I guess. Stadium situation, I think, is good. There's a lot of problems in San Francisco. Not the least of which is the fact they don't have any players. San Francisco, not a job that you want. What'd you think of NFL wildcard weekend? Kind of boring, wasn't it? Kind of a boring weekend. And I love NFL wildcard weekend. You've got a lot of games, a lot of things to look forward to, maybe a little bit of intrigue. Hopefully we have a close game. Here's some scores for you. I'm just going to throw these out. 27-14, 26-6, 30-12, and 38-13. Like, it just progressively got worse the longer the weekend went. Who would have thought on Saturday afternoon when the Texans beat the Raiders, that was as close of a game as we were going to get? Pretty bad. Was not a very entertaining wild card weekend. The Houston Texans did beat the Raiders 27-14, and I'm not sure right now that there is a more bitter group of people on the planet than Raider fans. They lost to Brock Osweiler, and you check right now, their mood ring that they're wearing is a dirty brown this week. You know, there are some teams that they take that injury, they take an injury to a key player. You think back to some great teams, maybe like Joe Montana goes down or somebody like that. Maybe their starting quarterback goes down and everybody just says, hey, let's all pick up a little slack. We're still going to do some things. We're still going to try to overcome this. And you see that, you know there are teams that have done that in the past. And when Oakland lost Derek Carr in that second to last week of the season, you're like, hey, what are they going to do? They're going to rally? They're going to come together? Everybody's going to try to help out the young quarterback? And the Raiders took a little bit of a different approach to what they were going to do, I guess you could say. They were more of a, well, Carr's out, so I guess there's no use in, like, you know, trying and stuff. Since losing Derek Carr, Oakland got beat in their final two games, the final game of the season and their wild card playoff game, by a combined score of 51-20. 51-20. And I got news for you. They didn't play that great of teams. You played Denver, who couldn't get into the playoffs, and you played Houston, a team that, had they not been geographically where they are, wouldn't have been in the playoffs either. Now, this week, Raiders coach Jack Del Rio says that around 30 players have been sick with various ailments, but that he didn't want to bring it up because it would sound like an excuse. Yeah, Jack, we wouldn't want you to make any excuses. Fortunately, when you say it now, you know, a couple days later, it doesn't really sound like an excuse. It just sounds like you spinning some good-natured yarns. Nice job, Jack. Way to not make any excuses. I don't know if they were sick or not. I don't have any idea. And I'll be honest, I don't really care. You didn't really show much fight in any of those last two games. That didn't make much sense to me. And hey, Derek Carr, phenomenal player. You lose him, it definitely takes a toll on you. I thought they could have rallied and maybe done a little bit. Done something. You let Brock Osweiler win a playoff game. Now, Brock Osweiler goes to New England. We don't endorse any sort of illegal betting. But let's just say, somewhere out there, it's legal. If you have to lay, say, $300 to win $100 on the Patriots in this game, is it worth it? So you've got to lay down $300. Hey, I've got a front, big money. I've got to lay down $300, but if the Patriots win, I only get $100 back. I've got to front the $300 in hopes of making $100, or I've got to front the $3,000 in hope of making the $1,000. Would you make that bet? Would it be worth it? Because there's no way the Texans are going to win this, right? I mean, it's still $100 for free if you lay the $300. I don't know. I got to be honest. I'm considering it because there is absolutely no way that the Texans are going to Foxborough and winning that game. In fact, the NFL just announced that the Patriots just got another bye week. Here's my concern for Patriots fan and the Patriots in general. They could actually be a little rusty for the AFC Championship in 2 weeks because they had a bye week this past week. They basically get another bye week this week. Whoever they face in the championship, the Steelers, the Chiefs, whoever that is, you're getting kind of a rusty Patriots team at that point. I don't know. That bet doesn't sound so bad to me. It's $300. I'm not sure I'm brave enough to do that, but it's $300, right? The Seattle Seahawks beat the Detroit Lions again in another ugly game. And the Seahawks defense showed they can still be pretty good, I guess. They held Detroit to just 231 yards. And don't forget, Matt Stafford has been playing very, very well. Here's what I'm struggling with. I can't tell if Seattle showed that their defense is still legitimate or if the Detroit Lions just did Detroit Lions things. They dropped passes again and again and again. It wasn't like they dropped two or three passes. They dropped like seven or eight passes. Bad throws, bad execution. It looked like the Lions doing Lions things. Remember, the Detroit Lions haven't won a playoff game since 1991. So now I don't know how to feel about the Seahawks. Yes, you blew out Detroit, but Detroit looked like when you picture in your head what the Detroit Lions look like, that's how they played. Tripping over things and dropping footballs and can't make tackles. And that's what the Detroit Lions look like. So now I don't know how to feel about Seattle. Seattle, now in the divisional round, goes to Atlanta to face the Falcons. This might be the game that I'm looking forward to the most. At least one of them. You've got great Falcon offense versus, hey, it's still pretty good Seahawks defense. It definitely isn't as good as it was, but they're still pretty good. When they met earlier this season, Matt Ryan threw 3 touchdowns, but the Seahawks actually scraped together a 26-24 win. Since that win for Seattle, I think the Seahawks have actually gotten worse. I think that Atlanta has gotten significantly better. Now, I picked the Seattle Seahawks to go to the Super Bowl this year. I don't like them this week against Atlanta. I think this was the game that Atlanta wanted. I think Atlanta is playing very, very good football. And I think that Atlanta, quietly, could be the team to watch. They could sneak into the Super Bowl. Keep an eye on those Falcons. I don't expect Seattle to go quietly. I think they'll scare Atlanta. I think they'll give them all they want. But I think Atlanta wins this game. I just don't like the way that the Seattle offense is playing. And the defense is not what it used to be facing a very, very good Atlanta offense. The Pittsburgh Steelers took the final week of the regular season off. It looks like it paid off for them. They rolled the Miami Dolphins on Sunday 30-12. Watching Le'Veon Bell, he just put on a clinic on Sunday. Such a patient runner. And his ability to stop, read where the hole is developing, and then explode through that hole is unlike anything I have ever seen. I don't know of a runner I could compare him to. It's different than I've ever seen a player do. It's really kind of a bizarre running style that he has. At one point, Pittsburgh ran Le'Veon Bell 7 straight times. Miami couldn't stop him. They ran the ball all day. The only real intrigue of the game, honestly, was when Dolphins quarterback Matt Moore got absolutely murdered by Bud Dupree. Again, he got decked square in his face. And it was like you could see that play unfolding. You knew what was going to happen. You're like, doesn't he see he's about to get... Oh! What just happened? He just got killed on the field. Like, we just saw our first NFL death right there on the field. And can someone please tell me how he got cleared through concussion protocol? That didn't make any sense to me. I understand if they take him over to the sideline, he's out for a few plays, and they say, well, hey, we checked everything and he's fine. But we just watched, it looked like a 747 hit him square in his face, and the doctor cleared him in like 30 seconds. I know what goes on in concussion protocol. That's not that quick of a clear. It takes a few minutes to do those tests. What doctor actually cleared him anyway?
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Dr. Nick.
So the Steelers now go to Kansas City. Now, for all of the running that Pittsburgh did on Sunday, late in the game for some odd reason, and I know Mike Tomlin is a smart guy. I just don't always see it, and I don't always get it. I know he is. I know. I'm not saying he's not a smart guy. I know he is. There are sometimes I scratch my head when it comes to Mike Tomlin. Late in the game, he still had Ben Roethlisberger throwing passes. Or else Big Ben was audibling and changing to passes. I don't know what it was. But Big Ben gets hit, and he actually left the stadium in a walking boot. Now, it's always hard to tell with Ben Roethlisberger how hurt he really is. Because, I don't know how else to say this, Ben Roethlisberger is just a little bit of a drama queen. Did you see late in the first half on Sunday when he threw the interception on the long pass just before halftime? And then he throws the interception and he sees it and then he's like rubbing the shoulder like, shoulder kind of tightened up on me. That's the only reason I threw that. Shoulder's just a little tight. Sorry, shoulder's just a little tight. That's like the equivalent of, sorry, coach, the sun got in my eyes. You can't start rubbing the shoulder. Like you hadn't rubbed your shoulder when you were completing passes. I saw him throwing the ball all over the place on Sunday, and he wasn't rubbing the shoulder. One interception, and old trick shoulder started flaring up. Not sure I bought that. Now, if Ben is actually hurt, Pittsburgh can forget it. He is the only guy that can get them to win right now. You can't bring in whatever backup that you think you have. You're not going to win this game against Kansas City. But if I know Ben, and I think that I do, he's totally fine. Now, I know the Steelers are kind of a trendy pick here, and I understand it. But I think the Chiefs are a little bit better than people think. Yes, I know. The offense is ugly. I realize that. And yes, Alex Smith makes Trent Dilfer look like a gunslinger. And yes, Andy Reid is probably going to bust through a wall when you say, hey, Kool-Aid. But the thing about Kansas City is that they do play very, very good defense. They can grind out yards without making big mistakes. Arrowhead is a really, really tough place to play. It is loud. That is the loudest outdoor stadium that there is, bar none. And as the women in his life know, Tyreek Hill is extremely dangerous. So I'm taking the Chiefs against the Steelers. I expect that to be a very good game. Looking forward to that one. Finally, the last game of the weekend was the Green Bay Packers as they took out the New York Giants 38-13. And Aaron Rodgers completed yet another Hail Mary. This clip comes to us from Fox.
Giants looking for a stop. They're going to air it out. Rodgers does this better than anybody. End zone, Cobb, touchdown! Unbelievable!
What is it with Aaron Rodgers and Hail Marys? Is there a reason that he completes so many of them? I've honestly never seen anything like it. It's incredible. When you watch Aaron Rodgers, how many Hail Marys has he completed? I'll tell you why I think, and I don't know. I don't know what it is. I'll tell you what I think it is with Aaron Rodgers. He's such a precise passer. I think that he puts the ball exactly where he wants it. And the biggest thing for him, he puts it in the field of play. You don't see him throwing it up into the seats. And you don't see him throwing it very short. He throws it right where he expects that pile of players to be, and he at least gives his receivers a chance to go make a play on the football. And as a result, I think those guys that are playing wide receiver with Aaron Rodgers feel like, hey, it's Hail Mary time. I'm going to have a chance. If I go battle a little bit and I go, you know, get a good position and find a spot, yes, I might push the defensive back a little. But I know nobody's going to make that call right now. And I know I'm going to have a chance because Aaron Rodgers will put the ball in play. And as a result, he completes more Hail Marys than I've ever seen any quarterback ever complete. It's absolutely amazing. Truly amazing. Now, I don't care. I know that there's a lot being made of the New York Giants wide receivers going to Miami last week, whatever they were doing down there. I honestly don't care. It's your day off. Go do whatever you want. That's not. But having said that, the only reason we care about it is because we found out about it. See, the problem, guys do stuff on their days off all the time. Guys run out to Vegas. Guys go to Jersey City. Guys go to Miami. People do that stuff all the time on their days off. Now, they don't always take pictures of themselves in jeans with no shirts on. And these guys did that. So when they go out and they literally can't catch anything all day, yeah, then you got to answer for it the rest of the offseason. They'll be answering for that until next year because it was publicized. It was out there. Like I said, this stuff happens all the time. We just don't know about it. You put that out there. You have the pictures taken. You take the shirts off and stand there in your boots and your jeans. Yeah, you're going to get some bad publicity. And when that comes, then you've got to pretend like you're mad in the locker room and punch the hole in the wall like Odell Beckham Jr. did. See, he punched the hole in the wall. Did he take a stud finder? That's my only question. Did he have like a stud finder to make sure he wasn't hitting, bam. Oh man, hit wood there. That wasn't good. Now I busted my hand. I mean, he put just the perfect hole. I don't know how he knew where it was. You know those locker rooms, you don't know how they're built. You don't know where the, he nailed the exact spot though. Pretty impressive. Maybe he has a stud finder. Takes it around with him when he wants to act mad. Like I said, I don't have a problem with it. The fact that it got out there, the fact that it was publicized, you're going to have to answer for it. That's the risk you run, I guess. Now, I know that the Dallas Cowboys are the big dog. They're 13-3. They've been running through everybody. They put together these long winning streaks all year. But I also know that defense does have some flaws. Now this week, they get the Green Bay Packers. And Aaron Rodgers could be exactly the guy to expose those flaws. So who am I picking? If Dallas goes out and they try to throw the ball 40 times, I'm telling you right now, Packers are going to pull the upset. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think the Cowboys will run the ball 35 times or so. And if that's the case, they should be able to scrape together a win. But if Jason Garrett goes out there, like he's done at times this year, and tries to be cute and tries to throw the ball all over the field, I'm telling you right now, Dallas is going to be in trouble. I'm picking the Cowboys. But Jason Garrett, don't get cute because Aaron Rodgers will beat you if you do. Hey, we've got a lot to get to. College football national championship game took place on Monday. We've got to talk a little bit of NBA. Plus, of course, the Daily Dose Top 5. You've got to make sure that you stick around for that. We'll be right back.
Here at RogueIntel.com, we strive to entertain and to stimulate. From nerd rage to outrage, from goofing off to deep thoughts, we've got you covered. The only way we really know how you all feel is to hear and see feedback. And that's more than a thumbs down, thumbs up proposition. Tweet us or write us on Facebook, review any show on iTunes, or to really mix it up with us, join the forums for access and insight on each show, its creators, and what everyone else who listens like you do feels about it. Feedback, because we're starving for it.
Hi guys, Cooper here from the Unquote Podcast. Unquote delves into what makes movie quotes so, well, quotable. See, I have a guest each week watch a movie selected from the American Film Institute's Top 100 Movie Quotes list, and then we sit down and ponder cultural impingement and cinematic preponderance and... Okay, you got me. My thesaurus was totally open. A little factual and a lot of fun, it's the least contentious peanut gallery in history. Unquote is part of the Rogue Intel Network, and you can find me on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter.
Dear podcast listener, we accept the fact that we have to sacrifice not only our Wednesdays, but our Fridays as well to entertain you. But we think you are crazy to make us do a promo telling you who we think we are. When you listen to our podcast, you think you know who we are, in the simplest terms, in the most convenient definitions. But what we found out is that each one of us is a dork,
I had the basket case.
And I'm a princess.
And I'm a pothead.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Prime Podcast. Find out more at theprimepod.com. Think of the tender things
that we were working on. I want to talk just a little NBA before we get over to our college football championship that took place on Monday night. You know, the Cleveland Cavaliers sent Mike Dunleavy, Mo Williams, and a protected first-round pick to the Atlanta Hawks last week for shooter Kyle Korver. Of course, Kyle Korver is a 14-year veteran that has made 43% of his three-point shots in his career. He usually gets contested threes. I would think, playing with Kyrie, playing with LeBron, he may get a few more open looks. And you can tell this move was made with the Golden State Warriors in mind. It isn't like Cleveland has to make this move to try to get by the Torontos and the Chicagos and the Bostons. They made this move clearly with Golden State in mind. When I saw this trade come down, though, I started hearing a number of people saying, well, that clinches it. That'll do it. Let's slow down on this trade, making the Cavaliers significantly better. I have a few problems with this trade in that I don't know that it makes Cleveland all that much better. Here's the thing. The Cavs already take a ton of threes. They take 33 three-pointers a game, and they make 13 of them. That ranks like first or second in the league in both attempted and made. So how much better is it really going to make you? Maybe he raises your percentage a little bit, but I don't know that it really changes that much of what Cleveland does. They already shoot a ton of threes, and they shoot them reasonably well. Like I said, maybe it raises their percentage just a little bit. Second, Cleveland still didn't go get the depth at point guard that they truly need. Remember, Kyrie Irving has had a history of some injuries. And remember, when they faced Golden State without Kyrie, they couldn't hang at all. You needed some depth at point guard. When he comes out of the game, as important as LeBron is, don't get me wrong, you don't have enough depth at point guard. And you didn't go get that. You didn't address that in any way. Lastly, and Kyle Korver is a pro. He's a great shooter. But are you really going to be putting him in those games against Golden State when you need a stop? No, you aren't. Kyle Korver can't defend anyone. So let's stop with the, well, this clearly makes Cleveland the heavy favorite. Look, they're the champs. They're right there being the favorite. I don't know that Kyle Korver really lifts them up above everyone else. Let's be real clear. Both of these teams, Golden State and Cleveland, kind of stayed the same. Golden State got Kevin Durant. Cleveland got Kyle Korver. It's not quite the same there. That's not really tipping the scales, is it? Slow down on Kyle Korver really clinching everything for Cleveland Cavaliers. That's not exactly how that's gone. Let's talk a little bit of college football. You might have missed this, but Cal Berkeley fired head coach Sonny Dykes this past week. Kind of weird timing. It's kind of weird that they would wait so long to fire. If you're going to fire him at the end of your regular season and get moving. Because right now, you need to be hitting the recruiting trail pretty hard, and you're not doing anything. You don't even have a coach to hit the recruiting trail. And I have to think there's a few contributing factors as to why Cal fired Sonny Dykes. Dykes was just 19-30 at Cal. But let's be honest. Cal isn't exactly a football factory. It's not like they're holding, hey, you've got to win some big-time bowl games. You've got to get in the national championship. It's Cal. If you make a bowl game at all, we're probably pretty happy. So I don't think it was just Dykes' record. But Sonny Dykes had been rumored to have been interviewing for a few other jobs that were out there. Now, that might not seem like a big deal. Coaches do that. Hey, yeah, I interviewed with so-and-so, and I know I'm still set here, but I went and did the interview. Maybe I wanted to be sharp in my interview skills or whatever you try to say. Here's the problem. Cal had just given him a contract extension last season. Now you're going to do an interviews? No. That's not going to work that way. And the one thing that I do wonder, I just wonder a little bit. Chip Kelly did become available. I don't think Cal can afford him. I don't think they can afford him. And if I'm Chip Kelly, I would take a full season and wait and see What else becomes available? Cal Berkeley isn't exactly where I want to go, but he is available. Could Cal Berkeley make a run at Chip Kelly? He would win there. He would be competitive there. He would get them eventually back to some prominence at Cal. I don't know. Maybe that's what they think. Maybe they think they can afford him. Maybe they think they can make a run at him. North Carolina quarterback Mitch Trubisky has declared for the NFL draft following his junior season, in which he threw for nearly 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns. Now, you might think it's crazy that Trubisky would be declaring. You might not have ever heard of Mitch Trubisky. But see, his draft stock is actually pretty high. He is currently ranked, depending on who you listen to, in the top three of college quarterbacks coming out in the draft. That draft stock, let's be honest, is about as high as it's going to get right now because it's a weak quarterback class this year. Next year is going to be better. So Mitch Trubisky, I applaud you. You go. You go to the NFL draft. You declare and you get yourself drafted and you make some money. And you do it now before they find out that you suck. And they will find out. But that's okay. Because just like Brandon Whedon and Josh Freeman and Jamarcus Russell and Jake Locker and Brady Quinn and Matt Leiner and J.P. Lossman and Kyle Bowler all before you, you go get paid, young man, and you spend that money wisely. Because it probably won't be coming around again. You may not get that second contract. Go get that big first contract and spend it wisely. I don't know if he's any good or not. I mean, I know that they look at him and they say, well, he's got the size, he's got the arm. I don't have any idea if he can play. I know he was okay at North Carolina. Didn't win that many games. I don't know. But I'm telling you, all you can do if you come back, all your draft stock can do is go down. You can only go down. You have to jump. All right, let's get to the national championship game. Crazy national championship game on Monday night. You know, I hate the choppiness of the bowl season. The season is rolling along. And then it finishes up with rivalry week. And then you have the conference championships. And we're just cruising along. Mouth is great. And then you have like 3 weeks. And then you have some kind of crappy bowl games. You have some NFL games. You have another week. You have some a little bit better bowl games. A couple NFL games. Then you have another week. And then you have some crappy playoff college games. And then some NFL games. And then you have the NFL playoffs. And then we finally get the national championship right after the NFL playoffs. It doesn't make any sense to me. Now, you all know that here at the Daily Dose, we try to help people out. And the NCAA, let's be honest, needs all the help it can get. So simple. It's so simple. Play the bowl games starting, I don't know, December 10th. Right after the season ends, start those bowl games. Play those first playoff games either the Friday or the Saturday before Christmas. Play the championship game on the night of January 1st. I know. There we go making sense again. But you would own that holiday season and you would get it all wrapped up prior to the NFL playoffs. It would just be consistent from the 10th right on through to the 1st of January. College football would own that section. Because right now, it all feels very, very disjointed. Could we have just a little continuity? You can't tell me all that downtime, that month of downtime, doesn't affect these games. Look at Monday night. It took Clemson at least the first half to even settle in and really get going. Can't stand this huge break. And then you don't know when the games are. Oh, I don't know, Friday night? Oh, it's New Year's Eve this time? Oh, it's the Monday after the New Year's, the next Monday. Just play them straight through. It makes no sense. NCAA. Doing things just a little bit dumber. Incredible finish to the national championship game on Monday night as Clemson came from behind to beat Alabama 35-31. This clip comes to us from ESPN.
How great is this? This could be the final play of the college season, perhaps, if Clemson gets a touchdown to win it. If Bama can hold them out, perhaps a field goal attempt for overtime. Watson. Touchdown! Hunter Renfro, little man, makes another enormous play. 1 second remaining.
Yes, the Clemson Tigers win their first national championship since 1981. You know, based on those numbers, figured it out. They are actually due to win another national championship right around 2054. So just kind of keep that in the back of your mind. 2054, Clemson Tigers, you should be back. You know, Clemson did what we didn't think they could do. They racked up over 500 yards on the Alabama defense. And it still almost wasn't enough. The game had three lead changes in the final 5 minutes. I'll be honest, I'm not sure it was a good game, but it was an entertaining finish. Very entertaining finish. I've heard it was better than Texas USC. I've heard that it's better than some of the national championship games that have been played. Easy. I know you're all wrapped up in the emotion of it, but let's not forget, there were 29 punts in the game. It was a great finish. It wasn't exactly a great game. Like, the first three quarters, I'm kind of nodding off. I don't know. It's all right. Bama looks like they're going to just grind this out and win it. And then the end of the game, and Clemson got that offense going, that ended up being really, really fun to watch. Now, we had some winners and losers from the game. We had some winners and losers. And, of course, being the Daily Dose, it's not always the winners and losers that you might think, but I do want to just go over a few of the winners and losers from the national championship game. I'll say this right up front. Referee Mike Duffy, he's a Big 12 official. He had a pretty good night on camera. I don't know. Dude may have skipped leg day once or twice at the gym because he has got the gun show out. Man, he looks like he should be drafted. How are NFL teams passing on Mike Duffy? He was out there. Dude should have just went completely sleeveless. He looked like he could have been Ed Hockley's long-lost son. I don't know. He had a pretty good night. And I'm not sure the refs actually had a good night. I don't think they affected the outcome of the game. I think there were a couple of things. I thought the Alabama defensive backs got away with a few things. I thought there were a few shots in the head on both sides that didn't get called. You could have called maybe a pick play or two if you wanted against Clemson. But I didn't think it really affected the outcome of the game. Calls went both ways. There wasn't one, well, we got all the bad calls. No, it went both ways. Didn't think that affected it. All right, let's get to some winners and losers from Monday night's national championship game. Winner, our first winner, has got to be Alabama quarterback Jalen Hurts. Wait a second. Hear me out. I know. Hurts was just 13 of 31 for 131 yards. He was solid running the ball, but I think we can all agree he's got a long ways to go as a passer. But you just know, if Alabama had won that game, people would have acted like Jalen Hurts was great and he was the next superstar quarterback. Hey, he's just a freshman, so he's got to come back for another two seasons. We would have been hearing on ESPN, should Jalen Hurts sit out the next 2 years? Details when we get back. You would have been hearing that for the next 2 years. Now we don't have to hear that nonsense. I like Hurts' demeanor. Dude's face never changes. Doesn't matter if they're up 60, they're down 60. He's like Joe Louis back there. No emotion on his face whatsoever. But he does need to improve his passing over the next few years. Maybe losing this game will help him do that instead of everyone patting him on the back. All right, I'm going to give you a loser. Loser in that national championship game. I've got to give it to Clemson quarterback Deshaun Watson. How is he a loser? I mean, look at what he did. He went 36 for 56 for 420 yards. He scored four touchdowns. He threw for three. He ran for one. And he did it against what everyone was talking about being one of the best defenses ever in college football. He did it against Nick Saban. He did it against the SEC. And he did it on the biggest stage in the biggest moment. How is he possibly a loser? I'll tell you. Because Deshaun Watson is probably going to get drafted by the Cleveland Browns. Hope it was all worth it, Deshaun. When you're playing in the Mistake by the Lake next year, hope it was all worth it putting up those big numbers. Yeah, I didn't think so. Not exactly worth it, is it, Deshaun? No. Winner, Alabama running back Bo Scarborough. The Alabama running back had 16 carries for 93 yards, but he left with a leg injury in the third quarter. Now, when he left, Bama was up like 7, 10 points. Something like that. But now, for the rest of his life, Bo Scarborough is going to be able to say, hey, if I'd have been playing, we wouldn't have lost. You can walk in any bar in Alabama. Hey, it's Bo Scarborough. You weren't responsible for that loss. No. Hey, if I'd have been playing, we'd have won that thing. Because when I was in there, we were doing fine. Bo Scarborough, big winner for Alabama. Loser. I'm going to give another loser. I'm going to give this loser to wide receiver Mike Williams. Hey, that Clemson wide receiver is no joke. He had 8 catches for 94 yards and a touchdown. And you saw down the stretch, Mike Williams had those catches where he showed he is not afraid to go up and get it. Dude has a crazy skill for going up, grabbing that jump ball, and wrestling it away from the defensive back. Unfortunately, now he's going to be like compared to like Randy Moss for the next few months. And unless he puts up those Moss numbers, sorry, Mike. It's all downhill. You're going to be a huge disappointment at the next level. Maybe he comes through and he really is the real next Randy Moss. But most likely, we're all going to end up disappointed. Well, it's fun while it lasted. Hope you enjoyed it. Winner. I'll give another winner here. Winner's got to be the last 5 minutes of that game. Alabama was up 24-21 with less than 5 minutes to play. Clemson scores to take the lead with 4:38 left to play. Bama drives right back. Jalen Hurts runs it in from 30 yards out with 2.5 minutes to play. And with 1 second left, Deshaun Watson hit Hunter Renfrow for the game winner. Last 5 minutes of that game were as good as any national championship we've ever seen. That was as entertaining as it gets. Huge winner for those last 5 minutes. And now the loser. The first like 795 minutes of that game. That was a long game. That was a long game. That game went 4 hours. I don't have time to watch 4 hours. That should be a game and then like a part of another game. We actually have a list of things that were shorter than that game. I'm going to give you a list of things that were shorter. World Series Game 7 with the rain delay. I'm not positive in the exact minutes and seconds, but I'm pretty sure it was shorter. Remember when Aretha Franklin sang the national anthem on Thanksgiving? Pretty sure that was shorter. Remember how long dabbing was cool? Remember when everyone thought dabbing was cool? That was definitely shorter. Trent Richardson's NFL career was shorter than that game on Monday night. Lane Kiffin's time as head coach at USC was shorter. Steve Sarkisian's time as head coach at USC was shorter. Nick Saban's time as coach of the Miami Dolphins was shorter. And Mariah Carey's New Year's Eve sobriety was definitely way shorter than that game. The first however long that game was, man, that was a long game. There's too many replays. There's too many reviews. I know they want to get the call right, and I understand it. But man, that game just kept going and going and going and going. And I'm sitting there going, oh my goodness, can we ever get down to the finish? This game doesn't seem like it's going anywhere. Oh, another replay? I thought, sure, they replayed the touchdown, then they replayed the kickoff, and then they replayed the onside kick. I was waiting for them to review Deshaun Watson's final kneel down. Did he really get the knee down? I don't really know. We're going to check, make sure, and confirm that the knee was down. My goodness, that was brutal. Long game. Winner for Monday night. It's got to be Clemson head coach Dabo Swinney. You know, he's kind of a goofy little dude, but what Dabo has done at Clemson has been incredible. You know, Clemsoning used to mean that you would collapse down the stretch. They have now been to 2 consecutive national championships. Sweeney is 89-28 at Clemson. Who saw that coming? Got to give him some big props there. I'm going to give you a loser. Mrs. Nick Saban. Because you just know that little Nick was looking for someone to murder after that game. Now, from the time that Deshaun Watson threw that winning touchdown, how long do you think it took Mrs. Saban to get her bag packed and get to, I don't know, like her sister's house or something? I'm saying 3 minutes, tops. Mrs. Saban was probably scared to death. And I'm not positive. I think spousal abuse in Alabama is legal. I can't confirm or deny that. But I'm pretty sure it is. Winner, got to be the Clemson fans. Yes, Clemson fans have been the butt of jokes for years. As Clemson falls short, it seems like every single year. And now, I mean, hey, they can say whatever they want. They did it. And of course, now we get to hear all of you say, we knew we were going to win the whole time. We never doubted it for 1 second. Okay. Not sure that's exactly how that went. Hey, Clemson fans, enjoy the win. Enjoy the win, Tiger fans. And never forget, in your finest hour, Pitt beat you. Loser. Our final loser of the national championship game between Clemson and Alabama, our final loser has got to be, It's got to be Steve Sarkisian's sobriety. That didn't take long, did it? Okay, nerds, you've got holiday money to spend. You've got gifts to buy for something, a birthday, I don't know, a Valentine's Day. You did something silly, and now you got to buy your significant other a gift so you don't have to sleep on the couch anymore. Whatever it is, head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose. I've told you before, Loot Crate delivers a monthly crate filled with exclusive items and apparel from your favorite TV shows, movies, comic books, games, and more. You can go order a crate, you can order a subscription to crates, or you can even just order individual items. You know, the January crate is called Origins, and it features items from Superman, Batman, Nintendo, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I've told you before, the best part about ordering from Loot Crate is when you place your order, put Daily Dose in the coupon box, DALYDOSE, you'll get 10% off your order. Loot Crate will kick us a little bit of money, and we will forward that to the Billy Betts Lacrosse Fund, which helps kids get involved in sports. You get what you need, your loved ones get cool stuff, or you get cool stuff, and some needy kids get some help getting involved in sports. Everybody wins. Okay, now, as we do every single week, we've got to get to our Daily Dose Top 5. Our Daily Dose Top 5 this week, you know, this past Saturday, we saw the Houston Texans' Brock Osweiler square off against the Oakland Raiders' Connor Cook. Not exactly Bradshaw versus Stabler or Brady versus Manny. But I'm not sure if you realize there have been some awful quarterbacks that have started playoff games. A couple of them have even won playoff games. We saw Brock Osweiler. He actually won a playoff game. I don't know how. I have no idea how he won. But it has happened before. So right now, we will count down our Daily Dose top five worst quarterbacks to ever start a playoff game. Are we ready? Number five on our list. The city of Houston has a history of quarterback excellence. From Dan Pastorini to Warren Moon to Steve McNair to... Okay, what I'm saying is there haven't been that many great quarterbacks that have played in Houston. But in 1990, the Oilers qualified for the playoffs. Unfortunately for them, Warren Moon dislocated his thumb in week 16 against the Cincinnati Bengals. So 2 weeks later, when they met the Bengals in the wild card round of the playoffs, backup Cody Carlson got the start. He actually wasn't horrible. He went 16-33 with two touchdowns, but the Oilers got blown out 41-14 by Boomer Esiason and the Bengals. Carlson in his career started 19 games. He actually went 11-8 as a starter. For the career, he threw 21 touchdowns with 28 interceptions. But hey, he started a playoff game. Something to be said for that, right? Yeah, maybe. All right, number four on our list. Worst quarterbacks to start an NFL playoff game. You know, always a fun game to play with New England Patriot fans that are, you know, more of the bandwagon persuasion. Naming the starting quarterback prior to Tom Brady. Let's be honest, they have no idea. And if you really want to separate the real fans, ask them who started the last playoff game prior to Tom Brady starting in 2001. No, it wasn't Drew Bledsoe. It wasn't Matt Cassel. It wasn't Hugh Millen, Doug Flutie, Steve Grogan, Tony Eason. No, it wasn't any of those guys. In 1998, under Pete Carroll, yes, that Pete Carroll, it was Bledsoe that broke a finger on his throwing hand. So in came backup Scott Zolak. Zolak started 7 games in his career. He was 3-4 as a starter. And in the playoffs in 1998, he faced the Jacksonville Jaguars in the wild card game. He completed just 21 of 41 passes. He had an interception. The Jags actually blew out the Patriots 25-10. And Zolak became the answer to a trivia question. Hold on to that one. You can use it on your friends at the bar. Number three on our list. I know it sounds insane. It sounds crazy. But back in 2002, the Cleveland Browns were in the playoffs. No, seriously, they were. The Brownies had gone 9-7. Again, we saw a starter get injured, though. Quarterback Tim Couch broke his leg in the final game of the season. And, you know, this guy may not have been a great quarterback. He started 24 games. He went 8-16 in those games, throwing 39 touchdowns to 38 interceptions. But when Kelly Holcomb faced the Pittsburgh Steelers in the wild card game, he actually played pretty well. He went 26 of 43 for 429 yards. Kelly Holcomb threw 3 touchdowns. Unfortunately, the Steelers came back from a 12-point deficit. They won the game 36-33 over the Cleveland Browns, and Cleveland has not been back to the postseason since. Yes, Kelly Holcomb started a playoff game. Who knew? Kind of forget these guys, don't you? Number two on our list, worst NFL quarterbacks to start a playoff game. He started 7 games in his career. He threw 6 touchdowns. He had 8 interceptions. But T.J. Yates not only started 2 playoff games for the Houston Texans, he actually won one. It's kind of like Brock Osweiler. He actually won one of them. Remember, Matt Schaub was the starter for Gary Kubiak's Texans in 2011, but he suffered a foot injury. Then, backup Matt Leinart broke his collarbone. Enter T.J. Yates. He actually beat the Cincinnati Bengals in the wild card round. Granted, he didn't do much. The Texans ran the ball very well, but he won the game. And the next week against the Baltimore Ravens, Yates crashed back to earth. He threw 3 interceptions, and the Texans got beat by the Baltimore Ravens. There's your number two quarterback, worst quarterback, to start a playoff game. So who could be number one? Who is our number one worst quarterback? I think he's been number one on the top 5 before. Might have been a different category, but I think he's been number one before. Number one on our list. You know, the Oakland Raiders selected this troubled quarterback out of USC with the 24th overall pick in 1991 after Jay Schrader. Remember, he was so awful in that 51-3 playoff loss to the Buffalo Bills in 1990? The Raiders went 9-7 in 1991, and they made it back to the playoffs. But Jay Schrader got injured in Week 16, so Todd Marinovich got the start in the playoff game against the Kansas City Chiefs. And Robo quarterback went 12 of 23 for 140 yards, and he threw 4 interceptions. The Steve DeBerg Chiefs won 10-6, went on to the divisional round against the Buffalo Bills. Marinovich started just 8 games in his career. He was out of the NFL after just 2 seasons. Hey, next week on the show, we are going to be handing out some college football awards. I know, they've handed out the Heisman, they've handed out the Outland Trophy, they've handed out the Remington Trophy, they've done all those. We hand out some better awards than what they do, and we actually hand them out to the right people. Plus, NFL divisional playoffs, the NBA, college basketball, and of course, the Daily Dose Top 5. You never want to miss a Top 5. Wherever it is that you download the show, please go over to that site. Just click that subscribe button. It helps us get seen by a few more people, and then you will be sure not to miss any new episodes. Feel free to contact us with what's on your mind. You can email us, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at Daily Dose Sports. Be sure to do any shopping you might need to do at lootcrate.com/dailydose and enter Daily Dose into that coupon box to get 10% off your order. I have to say thank you to GSP. Could not do any of this without you. Hope you all have a great week. I will see you all next week.